Who's afraid of Celine Dion? This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Coming up later on the show, the Brooklyn Band Via Audio plays live in our studio, and a university takes a stand in the recording industry's fight against song swapping. But we begin with, yes, Celine Dion. She sold 200 million albums. 3 million people saw her Las Vegas show, which just ended its four-year run. But if you don't like Celine Dion, you really can't stand her. Music critic Carl Wilson of the Canadian newspaper The Globe and Mail calls that reaction a guilty displeasure. But that didn't stop him from writing about Celine Dion for his book Let's Talk About Love, A Journey to the End of Taste. Carl joins us from the CBC studios in Toronto. Carl, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, John. Thanks.
So you immersed yourself in Celine Dion's music for months and lived to tell the tale. Why?
It was kind of the end product of a lot of thinking that I'd been doing about the perspective that we come at music with, particularly as critics, but as fans as well, and the way that there are often immense gaps between what's critically acclaimed and what's popularly acclaimed, and wanting to kind of interrogate that problem and figure out why it was that so often critics and the public's perspectives are at odds.
Okay, and in the case of Celine Dion, 200 million records sold, fans literally around the globe. But in your community, the community of critics, roundly and generally kind of detested, it seems. So,
yeah, it's hard to find a critic who has good things to say. I mean, there are a few out there, but you really do kind of have to search high and low to find a critic who has nice things to say about Celine.
So you coined this term, guilty displeasure. What does that mean?
Well, you know, we've long talked about the guilty pleasure in music, and a lot of the time if a critic found that they liked somebody like Celine, they might call it a guilty pleasure.
Right.
But what struck me was the question that over time I'd sort of seen my own taste change from the time I was a teenager till working through things now. And so the way that I sort of hated disco or country music when I was a kid, I sort of came to understand that my cultural context was part of the reason for that, and that by, for example, visiting the U.S. South, country music started to make a lot more sense to me. And so when I came to look at the way that I was kind of repulsed by Celine Dion's music, I began to wonder whether there wasn't possibly social differences between me and people in her audience that might explain that. And so while we've argued really widely in the past few years that there's no reason to feel guilty about the pleasures that you feel in music, and then if you like something, you like it, there might still be some kind of ethical discussion to be had about our displeasures and why we want to distance ourselves or dislike particular music.
So did you feel bad that you didn't like Celine Dion's music?
Well, you know, I came across in my research this quote from a critic in the Independent in the UK who was speculating on who Celine Dion's audience might be. And he said, oh, they must inhabit some kind of middle England that's invisible to the rest of us, full of overweight moms and children with no friends. And, you know, and I thought that I thought there was something there that really did suggest a kind of stereotype of Celine's audience that I think a lot of people would, you know, be too polite to articulate, but actually carry as well. And it's that kind of like scorn that I had a sense that there may be a reason to feel guilty about.
All right. We're speaking with Carl Wilson. He lives north of the border up there in Canada. I think if you were an American critic, you wouldn't be having any such compunction about, you know, that kind of writing. But okay. To throw out another stereotype, we think that Canadians are very unfailingly polite people. And it sounds like, you know, you were kind of trying to be polite to Celine and her crowd. Now, you actually joined that crowd. You went to the show in Las Vegas, right?
I went to the show in Las Vegas, and I sort of hunted people down in fan clubs and that kind of thing, and had some conversations with diehard Celine fans, and sort of an effort to try and see it from their point of view.
All right, and Carl, who was that audience? Was it those overweight middle English people that nobody else sees, and the kids with no friends, whatever that quote was?
I don't think that it conformed to that quite as intensely as I might have thought. But what I did find was that they were certainly not an audience that sort of shared the kind of idea of cool and the idea of staying up to the minute and, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing that the critical community is usually sort of putting at a high premium on.
All right. Now, one of the things that surprised me reading about, you know, you at the Celine Dion concert, and it sounds from the way you wrote it that you were a little surprised at this yourself, is that when everyone started crying at one point, you found yourself shedding a few tears as well. Tell us.
Well, yeah.
I mean, what did that feel like? Why do you think that happened?
Well, part of the reason it happened, I think, is that I'd never been to Las Vegas before, and I was there by myself, and I have recently, my marriage had broken up, and so I was having this kind of desolate,
super bad day. All right,
wandering around Las Vegas, wondering why I was there, and realizing that the reason was that I was there to see Celine Dion, and feeling a little mystified by that myself. but when I sat down in the theater, you know, the show is very over the top. Was very over the top, and has a lot of spectacle in ways that I didn't find particularly appealing, but. In person, Celine's actual sort of charm and the sort of actual appeal of her slight awkwardness and her really sort of extreme stage presence was sort of winning me over. But meanwhile, you know, there was this little Filipino lady sitting beside me wearing dark sunglasses through the entire performance for reasons I couldn't quite figure out. And, you know, she was sitting there and she seemed to be unaccompanied as well. And she was sitting there sort of sniffling her way through some of the sad songs. And I felt sort of swept up in the moment. And I think sitting there in the dark with nothing to distract me and just kind of letting myself open up to the kind of sentimental force of some of the songs, you know, the better songs, there was no place to hide in some way. and so I kind of had to give myself over.
So you went in, Celine Dion was a guilty displeasure. When you came out, had that changed?
I think it had shifted some. I think one thing that I was trying to do, that, you know, I feel like the whole book was kind of an experiment in seeing how much you can sort of manipulate your own aesthetic reactions. And they're pretty stubborn. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think you change the kind of acquired preferences of an entire lifetime over the course of a few months just by trying. But I did find that I came to like some of the songs, and I certainly came to feel differently about her. I certainly came to have some kind of affection and attachment to the, you know, the very sort of uncoolness that maybe at first had seemed really unattractive to me.
All right. Carl Wilson's book is called Let's Talk About Love, A Journey to the End of Taste, which is an unusual subtitle given what you've just said, Carl. And I want to ask you about that in just a moment. But first, I want to ask our listeners, if you have a guilty displeasure, an artist that you just can't stand, and maybe you kind of feel bad that you can't stand this person or that band, you can call us to confess your musical sins at 212-264-7483, 212-264-7483, or you can leave a comment on the soundcheck page of our website at WNYC.org. And we are talking specifically with Carl Wilson about Celine Dion. And this, of course, is the song that everyone now associates with her, but it's just one of several. Now, there's a lot more to the record, Let's Talk About Love, than that Titanic song. There's this one as well. Now she's in jail for attacking her man. You gotta get what's coming to you. Yes, that too is Celine Dion, and also from the same record, Let's Talk About Love. Celine Dion in duet with Barbara Streisand. Carl Wilson, what kind of diva power is that?
It's too much diva power, I think.
How different would you say? There's two people there in that one song, Celine Dion, Barbara Streisand, both with these kind of global reputations, and yet both of them suffering from the same kind of, as you said, the audience may not be the hippest for these various people. Are they kind of peas in a pod? Are they musical soulmates? Is there a difference between Celine Dion and Barbara Streisand, between their audiences as well?
I think there's a significant difference that, Barbara, for all of her sort of cheese factor, comes from a kind of sophisticated Broadway, New York variety kind of tradition. And although she's kind of unfortunately let it drop, a lot of her early work had a lot of sort of wit and sophistication, mm-hmm. and kind of an offhand kind of 70s style self-consciousness going on. And Celine comes from a much more sort of isolated tradition than that. She comes from rural Quebec, although that has a similar kind of variety show tradition, and in some ways going back to across into the European kind of cabaret tradition, the version of that she came out of was very, very sort of middle of the road pop kind of industry, and so she doesn't have quite the cultural cachet, and I think you see it, Although Celine is a kind of gay icon, she's not the same kind of gay icon that Streisand is, for example. And there's not that same kind of campy ability to kind of manipulate the tradition in the same way.
Mm. All right. We're speaking with Carl Wilson. His book is Let's Talk About Love, A Journey to the End of Taste. And we're asking what your guilty displeasure is, the artist that that you don't like and perhaps feel bad about. 212-264-7483, or leave a comment on the soundcheck page at WNYC.org. So it sounds like, Carl, from what you're saying, that if you had written a book about Barbara Streisand, you would not have subtitled it Journey to the End of Taste. You did subtitle your Celine Dion book that. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's a bit of a play on Celine and Celine, Journey to the End of the Night,
right.
The French novelist. The thought was to sort of ask where taste comes from and why we have the taste that we do. And the tendency in critical circles and, in sort of fan blogs and all of that kind of thing is to use this voice that suggests that there's some objective standard of quality against which we're measuring things. And, the letter grades and number grades that you see on reviews or the number of stars that things get, that all of these things suggest that there is some kind of actual measuring scale that we can use. And the point of the book in some ways was to really question that and to really sort of look at my own tastes just as a sort of case study, and using Celine as kind of a sounding board for them, to ask whether if we looked at any kind of artwork from a different perspective and tried to understand the sort of scale of quality that it was measuring itself by, whether we might find that we couldn't quite operate the scales that we do sort of reflexively use quite so easily.
All right, so it's not just about Celine Dion. It really is a bigger question about taste, where it comes from, how it can be manipulated, if it can be changed. Let's see what some of our Soundcheck listeners have in terms of an experience along similar lines, and we'll begin on Long Island. Philip, welcome to Soundcheck.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Absolutely excellent program.
Thanks. So who do you hate to hate?
And I really, truly feel guilty about it, because the people I meet are such wonderful people, and they identify with the band and the sense of community. But the Grateful Dead, I try to just enjoy it, and I'm bored to tears. I feel like there's something missing in me that I don't get it.
Right.
Maybe you could explain.
Carl, does that sound, is that kind of similar to the sort of experience that you were looking at when you started down this path?
I think that there's different versions of this for different people. It's interesting with the Grateful Dead. I think a lot of the time people's antipathy towards them actually is aimed at the audience. You know, it's actually the whole sort of scene that surrounds the Grateful Dead that people get impatient with.
Well, yeah, so but that guy in the quote you took from the Independent sounded like it was aimed more at Celine's audience than Celine herself.
And I think that that's often the case when we sort of are dismissive of music. But, you know, at the same time, you know, if you're saying I've met the fans and I like the fans and I listen to the music and I just don't get it, that's I think not as much of something to feel guilty about.
Right. All right. Here's another from our website off of the Soundcheck page. Here's a comment from Kat here in New York. Where do you get off criticizing Celine Dion? She has sold most albums of any female recording artist, more than Shania Twain. Get off your high horse and stop wasting valuable airtime on this junk. So if I, you know, accept the fact that Celine Dion is this towering artistic giant whose nose I am not worthy to pick, but I still don't like her because, I mean, does the fact that she's sold the most records, is that supposed to kind of skew my feeling? Am I, you know, is it possible for me to change the way I feel, I guess, is the big question here.
Yeah, well, that's the dilemma in a lot of ways. You know, certainly you wouldn't want to go to the opposite extreme of saying that, you know, the more popular something is, the better it is, you know, and that is somehow its own measure of objectivity. But you do have to stop and think, well, like, okay, you know, if millions of people in countries around the world are finding something valuable here, then at the very least, even if I don't come to share that taste, or even if I don't really hear it, you kind of want to meet those people on some kind of respectful ground. And I think that a lot of what the book, you know, and the comment from the webpage really, you know, is a misunderstanding of where I'm coming from. But it's exactly an understandable misunderstanding, because usually what happens is there is this kind of dismissive and scornful tone. And I think that if we can kind of drain the resentment out of everybody's reactions to each other's tastes
from both sides,
that would be at least a starting point.
All right. Let's see what some other listeners have to say. Carla in Brooklyn, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, you got a guilty displeasure?
I do, and, you know, some things to say. My guilty displeasure is, I would have to say it's Melissa Etheridge. Yeah.
All right. You don't like the music, but why do you feel bad about it?
Well, I mean, you know, I'm she's a gay woman, and I'm straight myself, but I'm, you know, pro gay, and she supports a great deal of liberal causes that I certainly support, particularly regarding the environment. And, you know, and I'm in a group of people, and they say, well, why don't you like Melissa Etheridge? She, you know, you're pro-gay, you know, you're pro-environment, you're pro all this. I'm like, yeah, well, I don't like her music. Well, she sells a lot of records, and I'm like, but she leaves me cold. So you know, I feel bad because people get upset with me when I say I don't like her.
As you were just saying, you know, people feel bad. You know, it's music is a real kind of emotional tug, whether you like it or hate it, and never more so than when you really like it or really dislike it, right?
Sure, yeah. And it's, you know, and it's also, you know, all of the sort of associations that she's bringing up around Melissa Etheridge, and, you know, we have this sense that we should like the things that we identify with that have some kind of overlap with our identity. And so it's, you know, at some level, it's not about the music a lot of the time when it comes right down to it.
All right. So let's see if we can squeeze in one more caller. Michael, in Brooklyn, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hey, how you doing? I love your show. I listen to it all the time. I do agree about Celine Dion. I feel the same way. But my person is Bob Seger.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
So wait a minute. You feel you don't like Celine Dion either?
I don't like her. I kind of feel bad for not liking her because she is talented, but I think she just thinks she knows she's so talented. It kind of turns me off.
Okay. And what about Bob Seger?
I think he's very cliche in his music, but the thing is, I heard him on an interview, and I think he sounds like a really nice guy. I just can't get into his music. I think it's just too commercial. You know what I mean? His voice, yeah. It just... So, yeah, that's mine.
All right. Yeah. All right, fair enough. You know, everybody dislikes some things and likes others, and, you know, sometimes we feel guilty about the things that we like, and sometimes, apparently... we feel guilty about the things we just can't wrap our ears around. We've been speaking with Carl Wilson. The book is called Let's Talk About Love, A Journey to the End of Taste. And Carl, I'm not sure exactly what we've learned here today, but it's certainly been fun reading your kind of trip into Dion world. Thanks very much for sharing it with us this afternoon.
You're welcome, John. Thanks a lot for having me.
And coming up, something completely different from Celine Dion, a live performance from this Brooklyn band called Via Audio. And stay with WNYC tonight for live coverage of the Iowa caucuses. Brian Lehrer hosts from New York with WNYC and Iowa Public Radio reporters on the ground in Iowa. Tune in for live coverage of the Iowa caucuses tonight at 8 on 93.9 FM and AM 820 WNYC. This is Soundcheck.